The following talk was given at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 22, 2026. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Morning. Good to see all of you today. All right. So today, I prepared a talk based on one of Steve Hagen's books, Meditation Now or Never. Now, there's a chapter called What We Come to Realize, you know. And it's just been sort of evident to me how much we get caught up, you know, in things and the ordinary stuff of the world. We really get pulled in. And so there are just a couple of quotes from this chapter that really stood out to me as being particularly helpful. And as over the past like year or two, I think I've circled back to Meditation Now or Never, and I often recommend it to the patients that I work with. If people want to, you know, just some basics of meditation. It's not a simple, you know, meditation book, I would say. There's actually a lot there. But it's a book you can come back to time and time again throughout the course of a lifetime, you know. So I just find it particularly helpful. So that's basically the what my talk is based on today. And I'll start out here. Almost everything we do is done for a purpose, for a result, for an end, you know. And so, in the course of our meditation and practice, I would say, this becomes hopefully evident over time how much of our lives are run by this. You know, we're constantly looking to achieve something. You know, we're a very results-driven society, I think. And so just the extent to which we go to achieve the thing is pretty, it's pretty insane, actually. And we can see this at the micro level, of course, in our day-to-day lives. Probably helpful to see it there, I would say, but also on a macro level, you know. And I'm not even going to go into all the woes of the world right now, because there's plenty, you know, going on right now that we can point to. But bringing it back to our practice, our own practice and watching our own mind. I know one of the things that I often bring up in my therapy practice is washing the dishes. You know, if we can just learn how to be with the activity that we're currently doing. It's a very simple practice, but actually very profound, you know. And we overlook just these mundane tasks because we're always doing them for the sake of getting on to the next thing. You know, it's like I don't want to, washing the dishes is just an ordinary kind of mundane activity that, you know, it's not even that big of a deal. But we wash the dishes in order to get the dishes clean and then move on to the next activity, you know. However, if we can slow down and just be with that activity instead of doing it for the sake of something else or doing it even for the sake of getting it done, you know. I don't even know what to say about it, you know. It's qualitatively different than our ordinary mind, our ordinary goal-driven mind. And it's really, the eradication of suffering, you know. And just that small, it's not small, but with that piece about like having the intent to do something, you know. That's actually the source of our suffering. You know, that's dukkha. But we often overlook that because we think we're going to get something off in the future. I remember a while back, Steve Hagen, I think, brought up really, even at the micro and macro level, we're just rearranging furniture, you know. Throughout the course of our lives, we're like rearranging things in order to, you know, have a better life or make ourselves more happy and content or at peace, you know. This is our goal. You know, we're going to have different goals, of course. But really, we're just rearranging furniture, You know, but this is all within wholeness or totality. And when we see it for what it is and not deceived and pulled into our usual way, the thing that we're trying to get isn't a thing. You know, it's not something to be achieved. We don't need to look. There's a quote by Suzuki where he says, "We should not have any arousing mind to attain something. When we have no gaining mind, then we have everything. If you think you are doing something special, you are not doing anything. When you are just sitting, you are just sitting." You know. And so this is shikantaza. This is our practice. And just sitting without that gaining idea, or without, you know, some sort of idea of what we're gonna get. This is our usual way. This is our ordinary mind that gets us entrapped in suffering, you know. And again, I'll bring this up. I think Jed was the coined this back in the day, several years ago. But it was a profound statement that he made, which comes up for me time and time again, especially in the course of my practice in therapy, which is treating people with mental health and addiction, you know. And it's Jed pointed out that it isn't the object, you know, of our desire that is the reason for us not suffering, or it isn't getting the object that makes us happy or content, you know. It's the elimination or the eradication or the absence of, that's probably the best way to put it, the absence of our seeking, you know. It's actually the seeking that is the dukkha, you know. And we'll get into this more in a little bit, but it's like we see separation, we see objects of mind, appearances, we get deceived by that, we get pulled in, and then we chase after. And it's this mind of not having, of wanting, that's actually the issue. And I thought that was absolutely profound when Jed said that, you know. And this is, I'm sure you can draw the line between that and addiction. So we have this grasping mind that we're plagued with. And we don't even notice, we don't even know that that's the source of a lot of our issues, or the issue, you know. Also, Steve Hagen pointed out at one point in time, it's like that owning the lake. You know, there's like a, maybe you're a property owner and you would be so happy if you could just have the lake on your property, you know, and own the lake, you know, and that would bring you your contentment, because then you could go out and look at the lake whenever you wanted to. But then if we just go to, you know, a lake that isn't owned, you know, first of all, we can't own anything, you know. And it's when we don't have that grasping mind, there what's there to own? You know, that doesn't even make sense. It really does not make sense to own something. So you don't have to own something in order to enjoy it. You can just enjoy what is. You know, if you're by a lake, enjoy the lake. You know. Couldn't get that out. You know, it's like a, that was a very impactful thing that he was pointed out back in the day, and I've never been able to eloquently express like what it meant to me to hear that. So, but we're usually dragged around by our grasping minds, you know, wanting to attain, wanting to get, or wanting to push things away that we're not that we don't want. The grass is always greener, you know, on the other side. I talk to people on a daily basis almost that are plagued by just this desire, wanting things to be different just by seeing images on their computer or their smartphone, you know, going on Facebook. You know, it's like all the shiny, happy people doing the things, you know, and wishing that their lives could be like that. And I always hopefully try to point out that it's just an image. You know, it's really just an image and a storyline that we're creating in our own minds, and that's the source of the suffering right there. So sitting without an agenda allows us to recognize that the present moment is already complete, it's already whole, there's nothing to achieve, nothing to gain, and it's just sitting with just this, sitting and just sitting, shikantaza. So the facade of self and the illusion of separateness. So by setting your attention here, the breath, on the supposed boundary, gradually you can see this boundary dissolve. In fact, you can see for yourself that there's never any boundary between inside and outside, self and other, ever, or in the first place. You know, and this is what we're very much pulled into, is believing that there's out there, the mind objects. And we usually assume that I'm in here, the world is out there. You know, there's a subject-object kind of split that happens where we have to get the thing and you know, in order to appease this in here, you know, and we're deceived very much by this inside and outside. And so we can begin to see that this self is actually a shifting collection of memories and preferences with no actual solid core. Which we commonly assume. You know, we assume. It's like a given that that's how what the setup is. We closely associate our sense of self, I, me, with the stories that we tell ourselves, with the stories that are reinforced by our society, our culture. And again, this is not bad. Of course, this is not bad. So we're not trying to get rid of that, because that's just more seeking or more pushing away. And this is basically consciousness. We get deceived by the appearances of consciousness. And stillness, our meditation practice, shikantaza, just sitting, we can see this. We can see the functioning. We can see the grasping mind. Very helpful. It's very helpful to notice when we're grasping and become much more, much better at seeing or grasping. You know, I didn't get that for a long time. Usually when we come to meditation practice, we're seeking that peace, that tranquility, you know. And it's that very seeking that's the issue that takes us away from just sitting, from just this. Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a whole book on this, which is called Being Peace. You know, the premise there is that you don't get peace, you know. You're peace by just being peace. It's already here. So in reality, all phenomena work together as a seamless whole. We don't see that because we're pulled in by the parts. So we ignore the whole. We only see these separate parts, and we go and we're pulled in and deceived by that. Can't read my own writing. Oh, yeah, this is an important point. I'm glad that I took the time to I took the time to see what I wrote there. Hopefully we can notice this, that when we become more acclimated to watching our own mind and the stories that we tell ourselves, the storylines, and how much we live out of that, and how much we live out of our wants and desires, even a want to not have that thing be near us, or you know, not have that thing in our life. So that's the aversion piece. So when we get acquainted with that, we can start to see that everything, every mind object, every appearance that shows up, you ever notice this? It shows up with a story. It shows up with a bunch of other things, you know, like a backstory and a history about how that object came into being. Each one of us has our own histories and stories. We create stories about everything, you know, and that's just how it shows up. And all of this, you know, hopefully we can see at some point is where is that? Where is the history? Where is the backstory? You know, and it's really just in our mind. You know, we're pulled in and deceived by all these stories. But the relative is like that. Everything shows up with a history, a backstory, and we overlook that, the relative, for the whole. We don't see the interconnected nature of all beings and how everything is intimately connected, and to the point where it was never separate to begin with. And how much suffering that actually causes. I mean, look at the environment stuff that we find ourselves in and the wars and all of this. The extent of this issue and how much pain and suffering this causes is actually profound, you know. Just this one thing that we can't see the actual nature of reality because we're caught, we're pulled in. So not being occupied with self or gain, this is really a gift to the world. Steve Hagen points out in Meditation Now or Never. And I really did my best to try to express, like, why is that a gift to the world? Seems like, you know, something that, when you say the word gift, you automatically kind of assume it's something that I have that I'm going to give, you know, to somebody else. I don't know if it really looks like that in actual practice, you know. And so most of our lives are spent completely out of these stories that we have for each and every object of mind, including myself and others. And with that is this willed action, or this action that comes out of these stories that we have, you know. And just this willed action and this confusion, this intention, creates confusion. It furthers the confusion. And this is really the habit of manipulating the moment for a specific result. And it occurred to me a while back, I don't know how long ago it was now, but I just realized at some point, like, how many human beings are there on this planet? If I try to even come up with a number, I'll get it not even in the ballpark, probably. There's a lot of people on this planet. And every person has their own unique agenda in some way. It's like, how do we even live on this planet to get together? Well, I guess, you know, we can see what kind of problems that creates. But it's like everybody has their own agenda. It's like, that's crazy. You know, to think of all these people living out of their own unique agendas and how chaotic and messy that is, you know. And so this is our typical will to action, where we're living out of this story, these storylines that we create, and then we're trying to get something, we're doing something for the sake of something else. This is all our usual way, you know. And so our practice is to just come back and start to notice that very thing, that leaning of mind. And it's the leaning that is actually part of the issue, is that we're deceived into thinking that they're separate objects and we lean toward or away. And then unwilled action, you know, it's like I've tried to come up with, what is that? You know, and I can't put it into words. I don't know how to express that to you. There's a koan that I often actually bring up in the course of therapy as well, which is where, and I believe this is Young Men. This occurred to me right before I gave the talk today, so I don't have it written down, but it's an appropriate response. So a student goes to this teacher, Young Men, and says, "Give me the teachings of a lifetime." And Young Men responds, or what is the teaching of a lifetime? And Young Men responds, an appropriate response, you know. And so that's sort of like willed action. It's just an appropriate response to what is occurring here and now without being deceived and pulled into our typical storylines. This is the maple leaf. You know, maple leaf showing front, showing back. Wait, I missed the line. Maple leaf falling down, showing front, showing back. Is that it? Yeah. Simple, you know, just action from the whole. And so to put that into words and express what that looks like is impossible. I mean, poetry, that, by the way, I think I might have said this before, but that's like the first poem that I really got, you know, I think so anyway, which I really just resonated with me. And so that's action from the whole, you know, not being deceived and pulled into our ordinary relative views. So the mind, which is always on our zazen, should be large enough to accept every image as it is. Big mind is the mind which is everything. When you have big mind, you have no conflict in your mind. Now this is a Suzuki Roshi quote. Give him a little leeway on his English there. I wouldn't say when you have big mind. I would say when you are big mind. I mean, but there's not a me or a you there to own anything for sure. But there's no conflict. So when we can see, when we're just sitting, the whole, there's no conflict. Whatever shows up in your mind, we're not bothered by. You know, we're not pulled in and deceived by. I brought this up before, but it occurred to me again in preparing for this talk that I got, I think it was my first Rohatsu, which is a 5-day meditation retreat, I got broken up with right before the retreat, you know, and that was painful. It was like, and I couldn't imagine, like, how am I going to get through this retreat, 5 days of just looking at my own mind in this pain, you know, but I went ahead with it, and I did the Sishin. Very helpful. It was a very actual, profound experience doing that. You know how it is when you sit retreats. First half day, is sort of like you have a busy mind. You know, it takes a little bit to settle down. So first day or two were like that, where I was like, you know, really preoccupied or getting pulled into these stories that I was telling myself and this pain and suffering that I was experiencing as a result of the ending of that relationship. And then, you know, once I settled into this, I started to notice that it actually wasn't the, how do I say this? It wasn't that I was sad or suffering as a result of having this relationship or not being with that other person anymore. It was more like it was the stories that I was telling myself about our future, you know. And so I was very much planning to be with this person, picturing what the future was going to look like, all that stuff, you know. And I just kept repeating these storylines in my mind and images that would come up. And I would, oh, how nice that would have been if me and her could have went and done this or done that. And it was these stories, you know. And so once I started to notice that, it was like, first of all, there was, created a space between, you know, there was a space that came up there. And the suffering wasn't there. I don't know how best to describe it. But it just became very clear to me that it was the stories that was the root of my troubles at that point. So, very, very helpful opportunity, I would say, to sit Sishin. So if you ever get the opportunity to have somebody break up with you before a retreat, it's a good experience. All right, so there's a koan. Hui Ki said to Bodhidharma, "My mind is not peaceful. Please pacify my mind." Bodhidharma said, bring me your mind and I will pacify it." Hui Ki said, "I have searched for my mind, but I cannot find it." Bodhidharma said, "There, I have pacified your mind." You know, I forgot about this one until I was preparing for this class or this talk. But that's what we do. You know, we don't notice that it's our own mind and our own being caught or grasping and the nature of our mind that we suffer from. You know, and so. Really, we completely live totally out of this relative understanding, and we don't see, you know. All right. I think I already brought up the points that I was going to make about that. We do often come to meditation looking for this peaceful mind, you know. Just like this student, please pacify my mind, you know. Well, why are you suffering as a result of your mind, you know? Why is your mind not peaceful to begin with? Well, it's not peaceful because we're pulled in. We're pulled into the things that we tell ourselves. Nothing I say is going to be right. It's not ourselves, but we can't see. You know, we don't see. We're confused. So to be fully alive, we must be fully present. So the past and the future are purely mental fabrications. You know, coming back to this here now reality, full engagement. in just this without the belief that anything is missing. And hopefully we can see at some point that whatever we think is missing is just a story, you know. That's what we live completely out of, is these stories, this wanting, longing, and loathing, as Steve would refer to it as. And we live totally out of that. Meanwhile, we're forsaking the peace of mind that is here right now. Or the peace, I shouldn't say, of mind. But this is our practice. Our practice is to just come back to the here-now reality without being confused, being hopefully not pulled in by our grasping minds, and starting to see that. And that's our practice over and over and over again for a lifetime. You know, much like Yun Men's response, student says, teach me, give me the teaching of a lifetime. And he says, what does he say? An appropriate response, yeah. Lost my train of mind there. But an appropriate response, you know. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to plan and plot. You know, it's just showing up in just this. All right, that's all I got for you today. Any questions or comments?
I feel like a lot of the time we often talk about how purpose leads to us wanting an outcome, and meditation, there's no purpose to it. But I also feel like for me, as I've kind of started meditating, my practice definitely kind of evolved into something different. Like I felt like I was able to actually pay attention to the way that I'm constantly reaching for things and kind of just really being able to identify my discomforts. So I guess, how would you address that a little bit about how there is no purpose, but it also feels like there kind of is?
Yeah, I wouldn't think about it too much, you know. I mean, that's basically it. You know, it's like that's really our practice, is to see. There's a saying that I hear every once in a while, is like, enlightenment is seeing delusion, you know. And so that's what we see. That's what we wake up to, is our delusion. And we're deceived into thinking that there is a reason, you know. But that reason, if you look closely at that and just come back to that over and over again, what is that? You know, that's like an object out in the future, you know, out there somewhere that we're trying to achieve, something that I don't have now, that I'm trying to get. And that very mind is dukkha. That is what we're trying, you know, that's the dukkha, that's the suffering right there. You know. So I brought this up in the last class that I taught, and it's that kind of a heated subject at times, you know, meditating for no reason, you know. And there's no purpose, no reason, you know. But with that being said, it's not bad to have a reason, you know. It isn't like I've heard it said before that's how we all kind of probably come here, you know, with a reason. You know, there's a purpose. There's something that I want to get from meditation. I know when I first came to Buddhism, I heard this word enlightenment, you know, and I was like, whoa, that sounds pretty cool. If I could just be enlightened, you know, it's like people would think I was, you know, people would be really impressed, you know, because I'm enlightened. Nobody really, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's not a thing. It's not an object to attain. Even I know Steve Matushak talks about this quite a bit, where, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had an anxiety and you wanted to help with your anxiety. And so you came to meditation practice to relieve anxiety. It's not bad, you know. But eventually we will start, if we come back in a sincere way, we will start to see that any reason that we put there is just an idea. And we can't ever get a hold of, we can't ever achieve an idea. You know? I don't know if that helped or not. Yeah.
I read in a book by an Indian writer from India that all the migration that is happening in the last couple of decades.
Migration?
From the Middle East to Europe and from south of the border to here is because of cell phones and the images that are seen on the cell phones of a better life, you know, a shinier life.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it. I mean, as I mentioned in my talk, like in therapy all the time, I didn't want to say this, but it's like that's majority of what I'm not specifically to technology, but it's the images, the stories that people have that are created as a direct result of something they heard, something they saw, and just the fabrications that we create in our mind. You know, there's a better life out there somewhere. Now, I always have to say, maybe it is better to go somewhere else, and you're in a war-torn environment or something. You obviously do what you need to do to take care of your life. It's not wrong or bad or whatever. But this is pointing out the actual nature of reality, right? So, yeah, anyway, thank you for that, David. Yeah, I appreciate it. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.